will be posting on her Instagram page. For the people who don't really understand who MOVE is, we created a 72-page book or pamphlet to explain the history of the MOVE organization. It's called 50 Years on the MOVE. People can go to my website and get that information, which is also where you can find the link for the song at www.mikeafricajr.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mike Africa Jr. Best of luck to you with the song, with spending time with your mother on Mother's Day.
Thank you very much, Sonali.
My guest has been Mike Africa Jr. He's an activist, writer, host of the podcast On a Move with Mike Africa Jr., star of the HBO Max documentary 40 Years a Prisoner. He's a stage performer, keynote speaker, and a hip-hop artist. The video of his song Fly Baby will be out Mother's Day weekend. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Bus is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. May is Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and KBOO is celebrating all month long with a limited series. Tonight's episode features an excerpt from a May 2019 episode of Pacific Underground and a music set compiled by DJ Sun Lee. Please enjoy.
Good morning. You're listening to Pacific Underground, the show created by and mostly for, with a few exceptions, Pacific Islander Americans and all the hyphenated varieties, really for everyone, but primarily for our people. I'm producer Jake, and I'm here with new guest host Brandon Cruz. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, Jake. Thanks for having me. And happy Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month to you all.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a new month. May 3rd, got a special day of all this API programming. So for Pacific Underground's new show, we've got a great episode coming up. Wondering if you'd introduce the clip for us, Brandon.
Sure thing. So next, you'll be listening to a conversation with special guest Angie Jackman from Te Veo Riata, Polynesian dance group, as well as Simeon Jacob to talk about Pacific Islander cultural dance.
All right. Yeah, thanks. I'm so glad that Simeon and Angie and now you wanted to come chat with us about this, because I know for me, doing both Filipino and Indian cultural dance groups in college, it was really great for me and kind of dealing with that identity crisis. And it was really great. I was just wondering what your experience was with cultural dance and how you identify. And was that part of, you know, your own culture or a different group that you did?
Yeah, so I had two very different experiences with cultural dance, actually. One was back home on Guam as a child. In elementary school, they actually taught it to us as part of our, like, culture, because being raised on Guam, you know, you're part of the dominant culture, me as being Chamorro. And we were able to teach it in our schools, and that was the way to, like, pass on certain practices and traditions. But even externally, like, when you hear about the songs, it like makes you think about what the language is and allows you to like connect in that way too.
Mm-hmm. And the story, right? The story is important too, because you learn some of the sort of the narrative history of your people through that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's definitely a certain narrative and like ideas that you can pull from each of the different cultural dances, and you really get to pass on a lot of like history through dance and song.
Yes.
Yeah. But as I was saying, like, I had two very different experiences, one being that where I was part of the dominant culture, but very similar to your experience in college, where I was actually in this place and the space where I was not part of the dominant culture anymore. And it became not a fact of trying to connect with my community, but more of a way to present my community to this greater population here in Portland. Because I also came out here for college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so in Portland, you were one of the few Pacific Islanders and Chamorros in your community, right?
Yeah. I went to school at the University of Portland, and there we had like our own club. We were the Guam Club, and every year we do like a Guam night.
That's awesome.
And we spend like a couple weeks and months before in preparation, and really that's where we get to spend time with each other, and we see each other more, because we all have this like dedicated purpose to try and show our culture through dance and performance, as well as like trying to have conversations about our culture and our people, because that's really like one of the main things that I see dance being able to do. You know, you showcase these things, and then it allows you to have more conversations.
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine, you know, as invisible as sort of Filipinos are in the Southeast Asian, sort of like Asian American conversation. I feel like our Pacific Islander cousins are even less visible sometimes. And so do you feel like sometimes erased in the whole Asian American conversation, that you're like, hey, we're out here?
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes there's that idea of invisibility, but it's also just kind of when folks tend to group us together as Pacific Islanders too. When you think of cultural dance, a lot of what people think is automatically Polynesian dance,
right?
But really there's so many like different cultures and communities within the Pacific Islander label, and you know, when you dive deeper, there's like the Melanesian, the Micronesian, Polynesian communities who have various practices, but you know, as communal islands, there's definitely overlap, and you know, you could even see that too with some of like history and just the different colonializations that have gone through the islands. You see like remnants of their history in our dances and culture too.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so when you think about that, and you look at some of the Chamorro dances that are being taught. You see a lot of Spanish influence even in the language, what people would say. So there's conversations being held about like, oh, what did it actually mean to do Chamorro dance? You know, what is our Chamorro language before we were colonized? So it's kind of those thoughts that start to arise when you go into those spaces and start to do these practices.
Oh, that's nice to be able to share with people who wouldn't know otherwise, and it's sort of positive, you know, share the positive parts of your culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like before I was in high school, I really knew nothing about Guam and Saipan. I had a Chamorro classmate in my confirmation class in religion, because all Filipinos are Catholic, right? who was from Saipan. And, you know, we shared a lot. I didn't realize that there was a lot of Filipinos living in those areas, too. And so you have that sort of community being a minority within another Pacific Islander kind of a nation. So well, thanks for sharing that, Brandon. Glad to have you on here today. So without further ado, here's the conversation between Simeon and Angie. I'm here with you with Simeon and Angie.
Hello, everyone.
Aloha kakaiaka.
All right. And we're really excited to, you know, bring this conversation to you guys. As a check-in question, I wanted to ask, what's been moving you lately?
Tahitian dance. I am the instructor and owner of Te Borieta Polynesian Dance Troupe, and we primarily teach Tahitian, but we also teach hula, poi, and Siva. Just any type of Polynesian dance is what moves me 3 days a week, and I love it.
Yeah, for me, it's really been a lot of just a lot of our community dancers, a lot of the freestyle dancers in the Portland community. Like this past month of April, there's been like a different event every weekend. And so it's been really amazing to see how much people have been growing, and like in, even in between the weeks, and just seeing the exchanges that happen for me has like been really moving for me. It's a really, like, there's a lot of growth that's been happening in, like, our freestyle community, and so it's been really great to be part of that.
Yeah, all right, thank you. And so, yeah, as people who both feel very passionate about, you know, that aspect of your life and, you know, your art practice and community building, could you talk a little bit about how your sort of journey to that and, like, how that feeds into your identity and kind of the meaningful parts about that, and just so how did you get to the point where you got to own your own business or bringing a service of, you know, what you're passionate about to people, yeah, and building community?
I never thought I would be at this point that I'm at. I grew up on the islands and was surrounded by the culture every day, and I started dancing when I was 10.
Oh,
and
wow.
So just dance was a part of my life and every day. And you know, it's gotten so expensive to live mm-hmm. on Oahu. And my husband and I decided to move up here to have a better life and family. And I really missed that part of living on the islands because dance mm-hmm. was every day. And so when I moved here, there were no actual like Tahitian dance groups. So there was a lot of hula groups there, and there are awesome hula halau here in Portland, mm-hmm. but there was nothing Tahitian, fast moving, and that's what really mm-hmm. moves me is Tahitian, because it's faster pace and just more colorful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to bring that part of Polynesia to Portland because we didn't have any of that and I missed it.
Yeah.
So I just started off with one dancer for the longest time, and then it moved on to three dancers after a year, and then it just blew up to the actually having like a legit
That's great.
Dance mm-hmm. group. So that was kind of my journey to where I'm at today.
Okay, yeah, thank you for sharing. Is Tahitian dance a big part of the scene and the ecosystem and, you know, in Hawaii?
Yeah, actually, a lot of people, when they go to Hawaii and they see luaus, mm-hmm. they look at Tahitian dancing and they think, oh, that's hula.
Oh, so, and they don't even know it's like, not Hawaiian dance.
Right, and then there's a lot of people that come to my classes and they take pictures of themselves or with their kids and they say hashtag hula, but it's not really hula.
It's hashtag Tahitian.
Right, but a lot of people don't know that. So that was one of the other reasons why I really wanted to bring Tahitian here, is because people need to be aware of all the different kinds of Polynesian mm-hmm. cultures that there are. It's not right. just Hawaiian or hula.
You can't flatten
Tahitian.
It to just
There's
one.
Samoan, exactly. Mm-hmm. And same thing, I feel like with being Asian too, people mm-hmm. used to group us together as like Asian. They didn't right. know, like, no, I'm actually Japanese. I'm mm. actually Filipino or, you know, Chamorro or whatever it mm. may be. So I feel like just bringing more of the Pacific up here to make everyone more culturally aware of
No, that's
Polynesia.
So needed. Yeah.
Right. And I feel like it's important to, because me personally, I'm Okinawan.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm Mexican.
Oh, okay.
And that's it. I'm not Hawaiian, mm-hmm. I'm not Tahitian mm-hmm. or anything, but if I grew up in that culture mm-hmm. all my life and that's all I knew, I feel like I can identify myself as being a part of that culture. I won't call myself Hawaiian because mm-hmm. I know, you know, even mm-hmm. though I grew up in Hawaii, that's like a bloodline thing, but
mm-hmm.
I feel it's appropriate for me to perpetuate that culture that I grew up in here, mm-hmm. and that's okay, and that's needed.
Right.
And then I got a lot of like stink about it before mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. from people wanting to join my group, like, she's not even Hawaiian, she's not even Polynesian, mm-hmm. why is she teaching? Mm-hmm. But I've also had a bigger group of people thank me mm-hmm. for sharing their culture up here when no one else would. So like the whole identity thing,
it's complicated.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
And I mean, there's a lot of nuance that people try to get rid of in the discussion.
Right. Mm-hmm. The world is so much smaller nowadays with mm-hmm. social media and everything and all of us being mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's right to disown or disallow just because we're not of a bloodline to be mm-hmm. teaching or perpetuating mm-hmm. that culture. I don't know.
Do you feel that there's a culture around hybridity, you know, in Hawaii and like some of the Pacific Islander cultures that welcomes, you know, has more of a conversation around that than we do in the mainland with like white and black and kind of like that whole like different. I don't know. I don't feel like we have the same vocabulary for it.
I guess I don't understand the question, I guess. Like, growing up in Hawaii?
I mean, when you were growing up in Hawaii, was there just a sense of kind of cultures being mixed and, like, people being mixed?
Oh, definitely. More? I mean, that's aloha. Like, mm-hmm. being welcoming to everyone. Like, we have tourists coming in and out all the time, and the people you go to school with are all mixed.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't black and white. We all knew right. we were all different colors, and that's just how we were raised because we were surrounded by every color.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny when I do like job interviews here and they ask me about diversity and how I feel about that. It was like, well, I kind of grew up in a melting pot. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see what the big hot topic of diversity is. Like, I was surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And luckily, me being here and having my dance group and having a bunch of different cultures and different, I don't know, ethnicities dance too and interested mm-hmm. in dance. And it's like, I feel like I'm still surrounded by it, diversity too. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to find, I know.
It's, you know, been meaningful to you since a really young age, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is the same for you, Simeon?
Well, yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting question of just, like, who has access to these different styles? And I think it's, like, definitely a different question of, like, who teaches and who can teach different styles. I think I think the conversation comes up a lot is just when there are different white folks who teach these styles that are definitely ingrained in like another culture that is not their own. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's always that question of appropriation in the sense of just like, all right, well, this is not mm-hmm. your culture, but you are getting paid off of someone's culture and like the experiences and a lot of the turmoil that ended up producing these dances. Mm-hmm. And so that's like definitely a very interesting question. And I think sometimes where like folks, at least in Portland, I think it's mm-hmm. very outright where like it almost feels like it's call out or people mm-hmm. get called out when those things happen mm-hmm. where when I hear accounts from other places in the United States, it's like if you are honoring the culture and you have spent the time studying it. Is where making sure that this isn't something where I think sometimes with Instagram posts it can just be like a tourist type thing.
Yeah, of like, there's ways you can treat it right.
Definitely.
That's more respectful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've been asked for show requests by people just wanting to exploit the culture. I call it exploit because they specifically asked for only pretty young girls that are size blah 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 between the ages of blah blah blah. And nope, sorry, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not here to exploit this culture. Mm-hmm. I'm here to, when I do my shows, mm-hmm. I talk about this song is from this and the story we're telling is this because we're still sharing the stories from the past in these dances.
Right.
So I feel like I need to like educate the audience yeah. during these shows about what these dances are.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. It's not just a yeah. show to watch pretty dancers in colorful costumes. This is for educational purposes.
mm-hmm. But also the lineage from the people that you learned it from, right?
Exactly.
You want to yeah. honor that.
Right. So mm-hmm. I totally get what you're saying about mm-hmm. like appropriation. And I do see that here. And I just try to like turn the other way because I do see some groups that are kind of like that too. So.
Yeah. And I would say it's like an interesting question of like who continues to tell the stories of those who are mm-hmm. not able to be here. And right. then the follow-up question is, what are we going to be doing to make sure that they can tell their own stories and making space for that? And so I think that's one thing I like to speak on some of the work that I've been able to do as of recently and like continue to ask these questions with the Pacific Climate Warriors. This is a new group I've been working with. It's 13 different islands who've been very actively advocating for mm-hmm. Divestment of harmful practices that are in, like very actively contributing to climate change and like global warming. And a large way like in our islander culture is that we do a lot of storytelling and a lot of storytelling. What we've recognized is through dance, through poetry, and then just like talking story. And food. That's something where I have recognized as someone who has lived in the United States, where a lot of my brothers and sisters in the South are just like in the Pacific aren't here to like share those stories. Like I recognize that like I am that person who needs to step up and like be a placeholder in sense
them,
and
yeah.
Educate folks what things are happening in the Pacific. In Australia, the main campaign that they're doing is called Stop Adani. Adani is an oil company, and what they're doing is they found this large plot of land where they're able to extract oil and send it abroad. And their export route actually goes over the Great Coral Reef. And anticipating that if this goes through,
the spills
potentially spills, but also just the traffic mm-hmm. Of exports would destroy one of the many wonders one of the wonders of our world. And so they've been actively doing a lot of work doing that, and a lot of awareness and education that is done there is through like our cultural practices of sharing our dances. I think recently there was like a basket weaving campaign, sharing song, and like connecting in how we know how to connect best. And so I think that's been something that I've been thinking about a lot, of how we can use the practices.
So the art has a sort of social meaning.
Oh, absolutely. And I think art has always been social.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where we lean into our strengths of storytelling, and specifically dance. And
that's so important.
And that mm-hmm. I would say that's like my entry point of where we can do and use dance to really educate, and not for the superficial mm-hmm. or just for purely entertainment.
Yeah.
And so it's like that idea that you have to know the struggle for mm-hmm. this, the work and labor that mm-hmm. goes into the final product, and you don't just get to enjoy the product.
Right.
We're going to invite you into the process.
Oh, wow.
And so that's
cool.
Where I really appreciate the work that you're doing, Angie, and making sure that you hold yourself and your group to making sure that you educate in the spaces that you hold.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we had talked about earlier was, or like before we got on the microphone, was that like as a performer, I also get those invites to come into spaces and like, oh, you're a Pacific Islander dancer. And I think sometimes just knowing that, like, oh, you're a Pacific Islander and you're like a creative or a performer of some sense, I think there is this idea of what they want from you, and it is that flowery aspect,
tokenizing,
and like they expect like some kind of hula, of some sort, and which is like very predominantly like Polynesian, which is, which I am not.
Not all Pacific Islanders are the same.
Or oh yeah, absolutely.
Pacific Islander cultures are the same,
and so
they just group it together.
And so, for myself, I identify as Micronesian. My family is from Pohnpei, an atoll island. Pohnpei is the one of the main six islands, but my family is very specifically from Pingala.
Wow!
And so,
another island.
Yeah, an outer atoll island. And so the thing is like it's very different from Polynesia and from Samoa and Tonga and Native Hawaiian practices. And so last year I got invited to the county to present, and recognizing that is not my experience. Like I got to share that the county of just saying that I have put together a dance, but it is not what I think sometimes as Pacific Islander performers get pigeonholed into presenting.
Right.
And so, let's see, like here in Portland, we do have like a very large Pinglapese community. And like, whether it's like,
I have seen them come with you.
Yeah.
You guys roll deep.
Yeah, we do roll deep.
They're great.
Very loud, very proud. And,
at Apano events.
Like we have like a handful of different gatherings throughout the year, whether it's like Christmas, Easter. We actually in August we celebrate this thing called Children's Day, where like we practice our songs and we practice our marches or lips.
Oh,
and
wow.
So yeah, and so like
that's
that
so neat.
Is like my background, and it's like a lot of these very intricate two steps down like the aisle before like singing our songs. And so like that was something that I got to present. Yeah, did so in my own style and like my own
but upbringing. It was hybrid.
Yeah, it was definitely
right?
One
like
of those
you.
Hybrid experiences.
like your experience. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like I grew up here in Portland, and it was really an interesting experience to have school life and like try to figure out, like it was definitely a very othering experience where you never really learn about your culture at all. Like there was like no mention of Micronesia until leaving college. I don't think I got any mention throughout my education experience through that. And so like thinking through, like I would go home and that's where I would learn as much as I can about culture. It is oral traditions.
Yeah.
That's how we operate.
Yeah.
And so it is very interesting to be in Portland and then not hear anything about yourself, but then when you go and be in your community, it's like we're here. And I think that's
supported.
One thing that I really wanted to present in that space and continue to really shape my work of like creating these spaces to let it be known that we're
our
still
presence.
Very much in that representation space of where we are here. And like though we are a small island, like I think as you may experience, we're very mighty people.
And
small
loud.
Island.
Small but loud.
Yeah.
And proud.
I one of the things I just recently shared is like a lot of our families immigrated to this country, and this is like a lot of uncharted lands, and like we come from a lineage of navigators. And like I remind a lot of the youth that I work with that like one day we will be the ancestors that our youth, like future generations, look to as navigators.
Wow.
And how to figure out how to navigate these uncharted lands of the U.S. That's why I feel like I really appreciate you like having us be in this space.
Oh, thank you.
just so I can be a reference point for hopefully many more Micronesian, Polynesian, Melanesian folks to be in this space.
You're listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO on 90.7 FM. Happy API Heritage Month.
And Pacific Underground is a production of KBOO 90.7 FM in fair and sunny now, hopefully, Portland, Oregon.
And a big thank you to all our guests, Angie and Simeon. And a shout out again to Teve Oriata Polynesian Dance Group. That's TEVAORIATA Polynesian Dance Group. Feel free to look them up.
I'm Jake, and this is Brandon. Thanks for tuning in.
Well, thank you for tuning in today. My name is Sun Lee. I'm your host, and I'm going to be playing music from the continent of Asia. A little background on myself. I am Korean-American. My parents came here in the early 70s, and I was born in the fine state of Georgia. And being the firstborn in the United States from immigrants is it's an interesting place to be. Was not allowed to speak English in the home at all, only could speak Korean. And, you know, having friends come over, everybody would be like, what is that smell? I'm like, oh, that's kimchi. It's delicious. You should try it. And then they would make a face. But one thing I've never really got into until I was preparing for this show was all this amazing music that came out of all the different countries in Asia from the 60s and 70s is where the majority of these tracks will be coming from. A lot of it's very psychedelic and funk based. Had a really good time putting this show together and discovered a lot of great new artists, and I hope you will as well. You can always support the station by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the Donate Now button. We're going to start things off from my parents' home country of Korea, and we'll let's just see what you think. I hope you enjoy the next hour. I had a great time putting it together. It's a beautiful day out there. A lot of this music would be great to just roll down the windows and crank it up if you're in your car, if you're riding on your bike. And in case you don't know, I also host the second Saturday Grateful Dead show. Tune into that if you love good music. And without further ado, let's listen to Lee Yoon Ha.
Good. 네가 나한테 좀 맞춰라. Thank you.
And we are in the middle of Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month music show. My name is Sun. I'll be your host today. I appreciate KBOO giving me time to play an hour of all this kind of obscure Asian music for me anyway. We just heard this track called Night Together. That was from Yuji Toriyama and Ken Morimura, and that's from Japan. Before that, we heard Lucky Lady, also from Japan, from the artist Ryo Kawasaki. Prior to that, we heard two tracks from Korea, and that was Kim Nam-mi with Ojima, and before that was Lee Yoon-ha with Jongil Junin Maim. And we're going to continue on with some more. Oh, I also left out South Club, also a Korean band with a song called Outcast. And you'll be able to find this playlist if you go to the KBOO website, and it should be posted here in the next couple hours after the show is over. And you'll be able to see all the artists that I've played. So I hope you're enjoying it. My name is Sun. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Oh,
listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Sun. I've been your host for the past hour doing the Asian Pacific Island Heritage Month music show. Please stay tuned.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, my name's Jess, and the reason I support KBOO is because, especially during this year, you're always there for me when I need you to be, and I just turn on the radio, and